Moncrief with Gas Networks Ireland. Aren't you tired of that ugly fuel storage tank, having to order and write that big check for the delivery guy? gasnetworks.ie/move to gas.
Computer programs control so much today and will control even more in the future that it raises all sorts of concerns about letting them near weapons. Yet already there are so-called autonomous weapon systems. Noel Sharkey is Professor of AI and Robotics at the University of Sheffield. Noel, good afternoon to you.
Hello, how are you doing?
Now, when we say autonomous weapon systems at the moment, how autonomous are they?
It's not an easy question to answer because we've had autonomous weapons in a sense for quite a long time to shoot down missiles and rockets. So they're on our ships, US ships, British ships, etc. And when a rocket flies overhead, they will batter into it and take it down. But that's not the kind of autonomous weapons that we need to be worried about. Mm. The other ones are being developed by the US, China, Russia, and the UK, and they're quite far advanced, really. The U.S. have tested these. They're like fighter jets, really, that Batman would fly, called the X-47B. And they have been taking off from aircraft carriers and landing again, even in windy conditions and being fueled in the air. And the idea is that they will be used in the Pacific, where they're greatly outnumbered by the Chinese.
So this would be like a drone, but no one's flying it from the ground.
Exactly. That's what they're like. Of course, they're tanks and ships and submarines as well, and, you know, all military vehicles, not Terminators running around with machine
yes.
guns.
Yeah, but these vehicles do have weapons on board.
As yet, no. They haven't been used yet, but that's the general purpose. The United States Department of Defense said in a document in 2012 that these were weapons that once launched would find and engage targets without human supervision, and engage here means blow to pieces, essentially.
Mm.
So now, they will carry missiles. They've got weapons bays on there, but they're not using them for that yet.
Yeah, but at some point in the future, one can presume they will.
It could be pretty quick, actually. It could be any time, really.
Yeah, so the amount of human interaction is, if you like, programming in a target and off it goes. Or, you know, and we don't know, I suppose, how much autonomy it might have if it perceives a threat to itself along the way to that target.
Well, the programming in of a target would be one thing, but another thing would be sending it out into the field looking for targets, and that's the real worry. So selecting its own targets based on information it's got. You know, it might be people loading hay into a truck, and it thinks they're loading rifles into the truck and kills them all. You know, that's the kind of worry that I have about this.
Now, at an international level, would it be fair to say there's been virtually no engagement on regulating such weapons or talking about such weapons?
Well, no, it wouldn't be fair to say that. It would have been fair to say that. I started talking about these in 2006 and doing a lot of newspaper articles and talking to militaries around the world, about 30 militaries, and formed an organization called the International Committee for Robot Arms Control. And we all went out and talked, but we could not get them to talk to each other. Mm. But in 2012, Human Rights Watch came to see me in Sheffield and said, look, we're interested in this issue. And they brought me out to New York, where I talked to a lot of NGOs, non-governmental organizations. That's groups of civil people, civilians, who work on disarmament issues like cluster munitions, you know, landmines, that kind of thing. And so at that point, we set up a campaign, which we launched in 2013, and we managed to get mandates at the UN every year since then for a meeting of experts to bear witness to what the problems were. And then this year, that moved to the next stage, pre-negotiation stage, where they granted us 3 weeks of government discussions. So the 120 nations at this committee at the UN were going to all sit down together with the military advisors and discuss what's the best thing to do. But unfortunately, Brazil didn't pay its dues. And with the new American regime being so tight, all the meetings for that year were cancelled, for this year were cancelled. Mm. So we're having to deal with it again next year. But there is a good international discussion going now. And we're leading a charge to get this a new international treaty prohibiting these weapons. In How successful we'll be, who knows?
Yeah, in the meantime, we have Directive 3009 from the Pentagon
the
in
one.
2012, where they talk about operators will exercise appropriate levels of human judgment over the use of force. What the hell does that mean?
Well, we've had a lot of argument with that about that, because appropriate could mean none, of course.
Mm.
You know, so it's they're not being clear about what they're saying there at all. And, you know, the UK have been saying that they don't, they won't sign any treaty because they will never use these weapons, so they don't know why they should get a treaty, which is a bit silly, because if you're not going to use them and other people are, you'd think you'd want to stop them. But what they all say is, we'll make sure that there's levels of human control. And the argument there is, what the hell does that mean, as you've just said? I mean, does it mean that, like the Patriot missile, there was 8 seconds to press a button to veto it, so that pointed it, and there, you know, a British fighter jet and 2 American combat planes were shot down because nobody could veto it in 7-8 seconds. I mean, it was too soon. So it could be just vetoing it, or it could be just saying, okay, that's fine, you've got the target. But what we want, really, what we're pushing for is this idea of meaningful human control, where you have an operator who actually engages enough to be able to check the legitimacy of the target and make sure it's a real target. I mean, sure, they'll make mistakes, but they won't make the mistakes that these machines would make.
Because, interestingly enough, in the wider context of American politics and politics in many Western countries, there's increasing concern about jobs just disappearing because they're taken over by robots. It's inevitable it's going to happen in the military as well, given that's so expensive on most national economies.
Yes, well, I mean, there's many things that you can be doing in the military. We don't mind them using autonomous robots for other things. I mean, they're using them for things like cleaning the hull of battleships. And the one I really approve of is the use of robots to clear out roadside bombs. I mean, that's what kills most young men that we send to Afghanistan and Iraq. It's, you know, going these bombs under cars and in the roadway and using robots. But they won't put much budget into that. I mean, all the budget, like the billions of budget, goes into offensive weapons instead of robots that will protect our troops. But there's lots of work that could be carried out, you know, espionage work, surveillance work. So the only thing we're really trying to get banned is the actual selection of a target by a machine and the pulling of the trigger.
Yeah.
We don't believe that machines should be allowed the life and death decision of a human.
Given that probably the likes of Russia, China, the United States, at the very least, are working on this kind of technology and wouldn't want to let anyone know what direction they're working in, we don't really know how developed it is or not.
Well, we don't know from Russia and China, that's for sure, although Russia seemed to be showing off a lot of kit. They have a thing called the T-14 Armati tank. And that tank, according to US military advisors I've talked to, is like 10 or 20 years ahead of anything else in the world. And they're working very hard to make it autonomous. And it's a scary thought to think of these. They're absolutely massive. You know, I couldn't get one into my house. And the idea of them being on the European border in the thousands is a pretty scary one, I think. But they're displaying it quite a lot. The US have been showing off about these weapons since 2002. They've been really pushing it. They're the ones who are really pushing it, because they're saying, you know, we've lost our military advantage with missile technology now, so we're damn sure we're going to get an advantage with these weapons. And they're not thinking at all that other people are all going to have them. I mean, they're not going to be the only people. So, and China, they keep their cards very close to their chest. We know they're developing them, and I get information from Chinese journalists who interview me, and they will tell me one or two things, or they show up at an air display. We know they're developing an air-to-air combat aircraft that's fully autonomous. So that's a very good use, because they can do all sorts of jerks and twists at speeds, G-forces that pilots couldn't stand.
There are also now, I think Samsung have denied it, but in another part of the world where the tensions have been racked up on the DMZ in Korea, there have been reports that there's a turret there that Samsung built that's capable of engaging enemies by itself.
Yes, that's absolutely correct. And I've been to South Korea. Yes, There's not just one, there's lots of them along the border. And at the moment, they can be switched to fully automatic, but at the moment there's an operator operating them. And I spoke to the defense chiefs there who said to me that they were not happy about autonomous weapons, but nonetheless, they thought they were a special case because they're pointed into the DMZ. And the way a DMZ works under the laws of war, because they're still officially at war with North Korea, the way the DMZ works is that if somebody enters there, they're a legitimate target. So they're set up there, but they said they wouldn't switch them on unless there was a swarm coming at them, like a swarm of soldiers and tanks. Then they would switch them on. I don't approve of it, but it's not out of control. And they're also, I mean, people don't necessarily generally know about this, but they've also got them all the way along the Turkish border with Syria now.
And how sophisticated is the programming in these devices? Is there any sense of proportionality? What tells it to stop shooting?
No, not at all. In terms of the border patrol ones, like in South Korea and in Turkey, essentially, you know, imagine something like your burglar alarm sensors. You know those big sensors you have up in the corner of your room, and they detect a moving hot body. Well, it's something like that. So you switch these on, you let them sit there. They detect a moving hot body, they shoot at it. Now, the one in Turkey, they say that it speaks in two or three languages and tells people to go away or they'll be shot first, and then it shoots them.
That's a
so there's no. But then in terms of the ones that are being developed that are more sort of wide roaming, one of the big problems of those is, of course, they have no idea of proportionality. I mean, humans don't know what. I mean, the law of proportionality in the Geneva Convention, to paraphrase it, says that essentially says you can kill civilians and attack civilian targets, providing it's directly proportional to the military advantage you would gain. So in other words, if you attack a very high-value target, Osama bin Laden was a very high-value target, you might be able to kill, it's legitimate to kill lots of civilians as well. And there's no way, there's no metric for that. You can't say, well, Osama bin Laden was worth 12 old ladies, 4 people in wheelchairs, an old man, 12 children. There's nothing like that. So what happens is an experienced commander on the ground has to use their sensibilities and think about, you know, rationally, is this a good idea? Will this be an excessive waste of life, or is it really worth it? And we don't do it incredibly well, but a machine wouldn't do it at all. It would just kill everything in sight.
Noel, thanks very much for speaking with us today. That was Professor Noel Sharkey. He's Professor of AI and Robotics and Public Engagement at the University of Sheffield.
Moncrief with Gas Networks Ireland. Aren't you tired of that ugly fuel storage tank, having to order and write that big check for the delivery guy? gasnetworks.ie/movetogas.